And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. Talk about scrambling the decks. A panel of three federal judges last week issued new political maps for Kansas. New boundary lines were issued for members of Congress, the state Senate, the state House, and the Kansas Board of Education. The judges stepped in because lawmakers themselves couldn't get the job done, but those lawmakers may be wishing now that they had. That's because the maps handed down pitted lots of incumbents against each other and created new districts that left state parties hustling for new candidates to run in them. The drama came to an end at noon yesterday, and now we'll try to make sense of it all. With us is Clay Barker. He's executive director of the Kansas Republican Party. Clay, nice to have you.
Thank you, Steve. Great to be here.
And on the phone from Lawrence, KU political scientist Burdette Loomis joins us from KPR Studios in Lawrence. Bird, good to have you as always.
Hey, Steve.
And John Hanna is the State House correspondent for the Associated Press. John, nice to have you, too. Good morning.
Yeah, good to be here.
Well, John Hanna, set the scene for us. What was it like in the Secretary of State's office yesterday as all these candidates filed in to sign up and to run for public office?
Well, I have been calling this controversy Mapzilla. And if you've ever seen a Godzilla movie and all the people running helter-skelter all over the place, from the monster as he swishes his tail and roars, it was a little more orderly than that, of course, but that's kind of what it was like. It was and it always is a little bit chaotic in the final hours before the filing deadline, but it was crowded and noisy and a lot of activity, a lot of buzz, and a lot of energy in the room. Joan Wagnon, the state Democratic Party chairman, said she hasn't had this much fun in 20 years. I didn't get a chance to ask Clay how he felt about it, but a lot of change in the air, a lot of candidates, dozens of newcomers, at least a few incumbents moving to what are new districts, House members deciding to run for the
right.
Senate, and even one senator, Ray Merrick, deciding to run for the House again, he came from.
And Clay Barker, there's a little ceremony attached to all this, too. As noon comes, the Secretary of State traditionally stands up and does what?
Oh, he bangs a gavel, and then anyone that's actually in the building at that time can still file. Anyone else is out of luck.
So there is a little bit of tradition that's attached to the whole thing. Yeah. Hey, Clay, I gather you had quite a weekend trying to hunt down new candidates. Take us behind the scenes. What was going on at state Republican headquarters as you guys came towards this noon deadline with just a few days to get new candidates for some of these new districts?
Several of us got together in a room with laptops, telephones, and we just started to identify the districts that had no one in them running, which ones may have had someone running. We would call county chairs, we'd call individuals and ask them if they were interested, and we slowly built up the list of candidates that we had. And in the end, I think we had 119 districts had at least one Republican in the House and all 40 in the Senate.
Was it hard to convince folks on short notice to run for an important office like state representative?
In some places. The Senate was easy. That's like a magnet. It just attracts people to run. In the House, some districts, we ended up with two or three wanting to run. In other districts, we didn't get someone until literally Monday morning that would commit. It's a tough decision if you haven't been a legislator before. You have to work 5 months out of the year, get a small salary. It can be very disruptive.
Yeah, and people, the learning curve is incredibly steep. How do you run for office? What do you do to get out there and round up votes, right? That's a hard thing for lay people to understand.
Exactly. Yesterday afternoon and this morning, I've just been getting endless emails and phone calls about getting voter lists. How do I get started? Put me in touch with someone. And those are the new candidates. The older ones know how to work the system.
Burdette Loomis, weigh in here from the University of Kansas. How healthy is a vigorous shaking up of the system like this, Bird?
You know, it's just fascinating. The political scientist to me is really fascinated. The political junkie is fascinated. I think in the end, it's pretty darn healthy. The previous House map was basically incumbent protection. The Senate map was going to have some challenges, particularly in Republican primaries. But there was something a little staid about it. And then you have this three-judge panel coming in. And I think that the Senate map's not all that unexpected. The congressional map, a four-year-old could have drawn the congressional map.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy that they had any fight over that. But the House maps, that's where the story is. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's Joan Wagner going, you know, oh, my God. Suddenly we got open seats. Suddenly, now, this doesn't mean that you're going to change the Republican-Democratic balance or the moderate-conservative balance. I don't know what Clay thinks or John thinks, but I think right now nobody knows nothing.
Yeah, it's too early to know. You know, Bert, I always think that someday we'll look back at this period in our politics and just shake our heads and wonder what in the heck were we doing. Just so our listeners understand, the way things usually work in politics in Kansas and really across the country is that the state house draws its own map, and one major motivation there is to protect incumbents. The state senate draws its own map to protect incumbents by and large, and then each chamber sort of signs off on the other.
Sure,
what
sure.
a strange way to do business,
well,
Bird.
Yeah, and it is, and I think we're seeing across the country some change, and I think that you're looking at more redistricting commissions of one sort or another. They're not all the same, but I do think that this process focuses exactly on what you're saying. And when I look through the guidelines, there was a guideline at the end, you know, that incumbents shouldn't go against incumbents. And I just have no understanding why that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
From a small D Democratic perspective.
Right.
I understand why it is politically. But the other thing here is that this shakeup, whatever you want to call it, Mapzilla, was totally self-inflicted.
Mm-hmm.
The House passed a map of its own districts that was fine. Everybody agreed on it. The Senate map was tough, but there at one point there was a deal made that could have put a couple of conservative challengers into moderate districts. That fell apart, and the congressional map, the idea that we had any kind of controversy over their congressional map in Kansas, where with four Republican House members, was just silly. But pretty
yeah.
clearly, the hang-up was the Senate map. And I think, looking back, my guess is that Governor Brownback, Speaker O'Neill, would have been happy, much happier, to have made some deals
yeah.
rather than to have this historic shakeup. And it is. I've been here 33 years. This is the most substantial shakeup in Kansas politics in my time here.
Oh, that's interesting. Again, we're talking about redistricting in Kansas. John Hanna from the Associated Press, Burdette Loomis just described this whole process, the fact that federal judges had to weigh in and write these maps themselves as a totally self-inflicted wound, inflicted by lawmakers themselves. Do you agree with that?
Well, of course it is.
Mm-hmm.
I will disagree a little bit with Burdette on the congressional map. The issue there, the real issue there, was the second district and whether it would become a little more Republican or a little more Democratic. And that issue mattered intensely to a number of Republicans, and that's why that was the debate. I mean, there's this talk about whether Manhattan was in the first or second district and you know, other things. But the real issue underlying everything was whether Lynn Jenkins got a little more Republican or a little less Republican district.
But John, we're really quibbling here over small changes, right?
Oh,
Lynn Jenkins is not under
the gap narrows by a couple percentage points or so.
And Lynn Jenkins is not under any jeopardy of not winning re-election this year or for the—
Well, I mean, she's of I will say this, of the four races, two of them look like they'll be completely uncontested at this point. We'll see where the minor party candidates fall, the first and the third. The fourth, there's a race, but it looks pretty good for Pompeo. Just we'll see as the campaign progresses. Jenkins probably has the most serious race, but you're right. It leans Republican in a presidential year in which there's likely to be a Republican turnout. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no sense that she's, at this point, that she's in serious jeopardy. But, again, the campaign hasn't started. What I found interesting about what the court did was, you know, your Bird is absolutely right. They had a bipartisan agreement in the House on a map. the Senate even was okay with a version, a slightly tweaked version of that map.
Right.
And yet, the biggest changes, the biggest shakeup is in the state house. And, you know, there are a few Republicans suggesting that the court, there's no evidence of this in the opinion, of course, but they wonder whether the court, the judges went out of their way to put incumbents together. You know, there's also others saying, no, they just ignored all the political considerations.
Mm-hmm.
What's more likely is over the past 50 years, there have probably been all kinds of little squiggles and tweaks in lines of House districts that were incumbent friendly.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you had maybe two House incumbents, and this is less the case in the Senate because the districts are larger. You had two House incumbents who lived, you know, relatively near to each other, and they would draw the line down the middle.
Right.
Well, the court just, you know, for example, you look at the district in districts in Topeka where there were several open districts. The court looked like it tried to make those districts more compact, and that had consequences. And also, you know, in drawing maps, they would do things like they would, you know, try to keep a district within county lines, whereas in the past it might have bled over to help an incumbent.
You know, John, maybe I should ask Clay this. What's your sense? Are lawmakers going to regret the fact they didn't get this job done themselves as they go forward?
They already regret it. The talk after the maps came out was,
we blew it.
That was, boy, this is, especially the House map, this is a good object lesson in why the legislature should do this and not hand it off, not allow the courts to step in and do it.
Clay Barker, what's your take on that?
I'd have to agree with John. I think the legislators regretted individual candidates. From a selfish party perspective, I kind of like it because a lot of these districts, we've done a quick analysis of registration numbers and past voting history, favors the Republicans a lot, and I think it's more open field running now, and it'll be a fight between the two-party organizations to help out the new candidates.
So your sense is that Republicans come out ahead, even under these maps drawn by judges, Republicans who already dominate both chambers of the legislature.
Exactly. I mean, the Republicans have a big lead in Kansas and a much bigger bench. And by lead, I mean with registered voters
mm-hmm.
and incumbents that are out there. And it just gives us a chance to see if we can push our lead larger.
John, is that your take from the State House there? Do Republicans come out of this thing ahead, or the Democrats do okay?
In a macro sense, yeah, there was never any sense that Democrats would suddenly, under any scenario, you know, get a majority in the House or the Senate. They're just too far behind for that. I think the more interesting question is, you know, Kansas has become essentially a three-party state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Democrats, conservative Republicans, and then whatever term you want to use, less conservative, moderate, traditional, there are various names for them. So the kind of the interesting issue is going to be to see how it shakes out for which branch of the Republican Party. And, of course, the conservatives are in charge of the party now, because that's where the energy has been the last 10 years in things like precinct committee races, and you've got kind of this whole Tea Party movement that's bubbled up.
Right.
So the Republican Party in Kansas has kind of moved toward the more conservative side, and I think you've seen some of that nationally. Obviously.
Clay, hop in here. Do moderates or conservatives come out ahead, or do you know yet?
That I couldn't even begin to tell you. I've just noticed in Johnson County there's a lot of primaries.
Mm-hmm.
And just from what I know of the people, they tend to be a moderate versus a conservative,
mm-hmm.
if you want to put those labels on them.
Yeah. So it's still too early to know as far as you're concerned.
Right. There's no data to make a quantifiable
analysis.
Well,
and of course, Clay, whoever wins those contests, you'll be working for them in the fall.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Burdette Loomis, you know, for those of us who spend time thinking about processes like redistricting, we think about these nonpartisan plans that have cropped up in different states around the country, including Iowa, you know, where the maps are drawn by a nonpartisan mm-hmm. panel. In the wake of this fiasco, I guess, on one level, is it time to adopt a nonpartisan plan in Kansas?
I've never been a huge fan of that, particularly. I think it is a political process. But increasingly, given the ability to draw districts with the technology we have today, available to everybody.
Yes.
And you saw that in the drawing of maps. It's essentially free. That you really can work on gerrymandering these days to such an extent that I think that the political scientists who have been skeptical in the past really do see at the margins, I think exactly what you're saying, over time these districts get the squiggles get written in. I just think from a small D Democratic perspective that every 10 years it's really healthy to have more of a shakeup. We're seeing it in California. California was the poster child for incumbent protection over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Virtually no congressional seats changed hands. And this year there are all kinds of contests, and it's supplemented by the fact that there's this nonpartisan primary as well. So you have two Republicans and two Democrats running in the general election. But my point is that I really think that this kind of a shakeup does allow for the parties themselves to recruit new candidates. Even Kobach, who is not happy, mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of fresh faces. And I think
why not encourage this every 10 years, Bird? Why not have a nonpartisan panel of judges do it every 10 years?
No, that's what I'm saying. I think mm-hmm. we just had an unexpected experiment. And I think from my perspective that it worked out pretty well. We probably got better districts, more contiguous, more compact, and somewhat less political. And then those incumbents will run, and they'll protect themselves nicely for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Incumbents generally win. And then we'll do it again. I think it's healthy for the process.
Is it healthy for the process, Clay?
I'd have to agree to an extent. I think the shakeup was a lot larger than people anticipated, and incumbents have been elected. They know their districts fairly well. Now they're being moved around a lot, but it did bring in a lot of new people, which I'm glad to see, a lot of enthusiasm. It's got our party county chairs much more involved in the process than in the past. So I think it's a good thing for the whole system.
John Hann, I got about 15 seconds here. One controversy here is that because Manhattan, home of K-State, has moved from the 2nd District to the 1st, that this big biodefense lab known as MBAF might be in some trouble because Tim Huelskamp, the incumbent congressman, is very conservative, doesn't like spending lots of federal money. Is MBAF in trouble, John?
Well, that's hard to say. That's probably more something going on at the Washington level. Huelskamp has, of course, endorsed the project, and that's going to depend on larger forces than which congressman represents the area.
Well, John Hanna from the AP, always good to have you, John. Thank you.
All right.
KU political scientist Burdette Loomis-Bird, appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
And here in the studio, Clay Barker, executive director of the Kansas Republican Party. Clay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah. You'll find more stories about redistricting and information about our show at kcur.org.